Daylight come and me want go home.
Hi guys, welcome to our new podcast, Two Truths and a Dirty Lie. My name is Dez, I'm your host, and I'm here with my co-host, Timoteo. Two Truths and a Dirty Lie is a podcast about facts, figures, and weird things from the past. Every week, we'll hit you with three quote-unquote facts, and you have to figure out what is true and what is a dirty lie.
Before we get into it this week, I'd just like to thank everyone who listened to the first episode, posted, told their friends about it. It meant a lot. You keep supporting us and we keep putting out really, really dope historical factual content for you.
Yes, we're very excited to journey through weird history with you guys, and we really appreciate your support. So, are you ready for this week's topic?
I am not ready. I remember the last episode I said I was ready and I realized I wasn't ready by the end. Nothing could have prepared me for those facts, so I'm ready to get into it, but I'm not ready for the facts you're about to drop on me.
Okay, so this week's topic, you might be surprised, but what would I tell you we're going to talk about today? You remember?
Fruits.
Fruit. So I did say fruit, but I did narrow it down to one fruit because this fruit in particular, I think we all have a relationship with because of lockdown. So before I talk about the fruit, what's your favorite fruit, Timta?
100%, it would have to be agbalumos, because agbalumos, I mean, they're delicious, but if you have too many, they kind of wear out the enamel
in your teeth.
Yeah, so your teeth become really sensitive, and that's like nature telling you it's enough agbalumos for today.
You know another fruit that actually nature tells you, like, you should not be eating me so much?
What?
Pineapples.
Why?
Pineapples have enzymes that actually eat you as you're eating the pineapple, because you can use pineapple juice to tenderize meat.
Right.
The enzymes actually break down your tongue and your mouth.
Your body, essentially.
Yes, as you are eating it. Like, pineapples are a very interesting fruit with a very interesting history, but that's not our focus for today. Okay. Are you ready to get into today's
that's,
topic?
That's good.
Okay. So today's topic is bananas. Remember during lockdown?
Everyone made banana bread.
Did you make banana bread?
I did not make. I made brownies, but I didn't make banana bread.
I made banana bread. I made Nutella stuffed banana bread.
Okay.
So today's two truths and a dirty lie. Number one. Bananas reduced the life expectancy in Central America in the 1900s.
Okay.
Number two, the first president of Zimbabwe was a man called Mr. Banana.
Okay.
Who passed a law making it illegal to make fun of his name.
I love this so much.
And number three,
yeah.
European elite in the 1700s and 1800s used to rent bananas, not to eat, or just to show people how wealthy they were.
So they would have like a fruit table stand and it would just be like full of bananas. And
this is the fact that they would take a banana around with them to a party. If you invited me to your house party, I would come holding a banana.
Yeah.
So you would know.
It was like a Birkin, essentially.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good. I like
I'm
that.
I'm rich.
Yeah.
Rich.
How, can you not tell by this banana I hold?
So which one do you think is a lie?
I think the one, what was the first one?
That bananas reduce the life expectancy of
South Americans.
Central Americans. Yes.
I think the lie is that Europeans carried bananas and they used it as a symbol of status and wealth.
Okay, so you think there was a Mr. Banana, a
president yeah,
banana?
Of course.
You're so sure about that.
It just feels really good. I mean, the fact that people used to say the president of China looked like Winnie the Pooh, and he banned all imagery of Winnie the Pooh in China, that's enough for me to know that it's plausible.
Okay, so
let's get into it.
We'll get into it. We go through the truths,
yeah,
and then we hit the lie.
Okay, so first truth.
Oh, actually, you know what? Since you got it right today, because that is.
Oh, yes.
Let's Let's get the lie out of the way first. Okay.
All right.
So in the 1700s and 1800s, British elite used to rent pineapples. They used to rent pineapples to show just how rich they were. One pineapple at that time was about $5,000 to $10,000 per pineapple in today's money. So it really was a Birkin.
Oh my God.
I don't know how much Birkins are, but it
upwards
was...
Upwards of, what, 20K, I think?
20,000. It's the Birkin of fruits.
Yeah.
It's the King Pine, as Charles VII called it.
Oh God.
Yeah, he called it King Pine. In fact, the King of England at the time commissioned a painting of him receiving a pineapple.
From who?
From his gardener.
Okay.
But his gardener actually could not cultivate pineapples in England. You know, England is,
they don't have
soggy.
The soil for it.
They don't have the weather for it.
I've always found that fascinating because English weather is so bad, but Norsemen would travel because England had relatively decent land compared to most of Europe.
Yeah, it's not as like it wouldn't freeze over. Right?
Yeah.
They actually did try and grow pineapples also in America, in Florida. They tried to grow pineapples, but the land would like freeze over sometimes, so the plantations just died. Yeah. But pineapples do have a very huge history as a signifier of wealth. So back in the day, some very, very rich European elite would pay for pineapples, but not to eat it, just to show it off. They would display pineapples like in the middle of their dinner table.
Yikes.
And be like, I'm so rich that you come to my house and you'll see a pineapple
just
here.
Randomly hanging out,
yeah, just in like as the centerpiece of their table. But they wouldn't eat it until it started going rotten. The up and coming wealthy who couldn't actually afford to buy a pineapple outright, they started renting out pineapples by the hour.
The nouveau rich.
Yeah. I'm trying to be like King Charles, baby.
Oh, no.
So they would rent out pineapples per hour and just take it around with them to parties. Like, hey, Birkin, look at me.
I'm just trying to think about the conversation around that. It's like, oh, hi, this is, how you doing now? What's up?
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, this old thing. Yeah, it's just my pineapple. I just, you know, I picked it up in the market yesterday. I'm not really doing anything with it. You know, I have it for dinner. I'm just, you know. Yeah,
walking around.
Trying to give it some air.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So so you are right. That is the lie. It was not bananas. They weren't really into bananas back there because they look phallic.
Fair enough. I can see that.
So they were like,
what's that? No.
In the early days of eating bananas, they had to disguise the shape.
What?
Yeah, they would put them in crystal bowls, or they'll cut them up or cover them in foil. Let's make it not look like
not early Europeans being like, hey, yo,
this looks funny,
brown paper bag that banana.
Exactly. So they would walk around with pineapples. The first pineapple that was successfully grown in England, they commissioned a painting of it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a huge deal.
Nice.
Yeah, that's why if you go around England, like, you have pineapple shapes on guardrails and all these things, like, you have little pineapples in the infrastructure.
Yeah, you have
of, like, London.
Yeah, you have, I mean, you have like these elaborate jewel pieces, pineapple shaped with like,
It's because of this history of pineapples.
That makes so much sense.
Exotic, expensive fruit. Back in the day, sugar was very expensive, so something that sweet, they were like, wow,
this must be the gods.
Yeah, imagine having time travel and coming out here and see someone putting pineapple on pizza and throwing it out, and you're just like, do you know what that's like?
Stop. What are you doing?
How do you feel about pineapple on pizza? I think
it's delicious.
So, okay, I'm very strange. I love the aftertaste of the sweetness. So I would order a Hawaiian and take the pineapples off the pizza because I don't want the texture of the pineapple, but I want the sweetness.
I get what you're saying.
They were onto something with that mixture.
Yeah, I think it's a good mix. I know people don't like it because it looks... It's a texture thing. So people, they imagine the texture in their mouths and they're like, I don't want that.
I think people might riot about this because the internet hates Hawaiian pizza and I'm like, it's not that bad.
It's not that bad.
Like, the internet tried to tell me it was bad, but they lied.
You know what's bad though?
What?
Dodo pizza. Anyway, this is a history podcast.
Facts.
Let's go back to the facts.
Let's talk about President Banana.
I've been waiting for this my entire life.
Okay. Kenan Banana, the first president of Zimbabwe. He has a very interesting history. In the fight for independence, he was a main figure. He was jailed multiple times.
Okay.
He was also a minister. So he wrote a book. In his ministry, he was writing about like religion and black liberation and the importance of independence.
Lovely.
And he rewrote the Lord's Prayer.
Mm.
He changed it from "Our Father who art in heaven" to "Our Father who art in the ghetto."
Oh!
Should I tell you what this prayer said?
Do you want to read the full prayer? Because I would love that.
It is worth hearing.
It's beautiful already.
So, "Our Father who art in the ghetto, degraded is your name. Thy servitude abounds. Thy will is mocked as pie in the sky."
Excuse me, what is happening here?
"Teach us to demand our share of gold. Forgive us our docility as we demand our share of justice. Lead us not into complicity. Deliver us from our fears. For ours is the sovereignty, the power, and the liberation forever and ever."
Amen.
Amen.
Okay.
By Kanan Banana, from the Gospel According to the Ghetto.
This is crazy.
Yes.
We need to just get more into African leaders and their philosophies, because I can't believe this is a real thing. And this man became president of a country.
He became president of Zimbabwe. It was mostly a ceremonial role, okay. Right? Because Mugabe was prime minister, and he held the power.
And Mugabe had been president. No, he wasn't president before.
He wasn't. So Mugabe actually took over the role of president from Banana.
Yeah.
And Banana did pass a law in 1973. Banning, making it illegal to make fun of his name, because he didn't really command respect. Like, he commanded respect a bit as a minister, a bit as a liberation fighter, because he was a liberation fighter. He went into exile with his family, he was jailed, you know, he really fought at that time. You know, most of the landowners in Zimbabwe, landowners, quote unquote, but the people who had power were British, the right? Colonial. They were whites, they were colonial powers, and he was like, "Father, Lord, give us our share of this gold. Forgive us for being docile, and grab your guns. Like, we are going to get our..."
So he was a general, not a president.
He was considered more extreme than the moderates, but more moderate than the extremists.
Okay, that's an interesting place to be.
It is, but...
But not good for a president.
Not good for a president, but that is not actually his lasting legacy. Unfortunately, President Banana...
Yes?
...was a closeted homosexual.
Right.
And Mugabe is violently homophobic.
Oh, dear.
And I'm sure our listeners are smart people, so they know that homosexuality has nothing to do with violence or sexual violence. But, you know, as I say about powerful men on this podcast, and I hope I don't turn this into one of those, but it is true, powerful men do love abusing power. Power corrupts.
That is a fact.
Yes. He was charged and found guilty of rape and sodomy. In 1997, one of his bodyguards was charged for murder, and in the trial it came out that he killed the other guy because the guy called him Banana's wife.
Oh.
It turned out that while president of Zimbabwe, Kanan Banana used his power to abuse men, from gardeners to players and teams he coached to his bodyguards. He was raping men in Zimbabwe. And so he is obviously not considered... his legacy is obviously...
He's not a shining beacon.
He's not a shining beacon of liberation. Apparently, when he drugged his bodyguard, he called his bodyguard into... This was in the presidential villa, in an office in the presidential villa, and he called his bodyguard in to play cards, drugged his drink, and raped him. And according to like court transcripts, he said to his bodyguard, when the bodyguard was, you know, trying to fight him off, that "I am the final court of appeal."
Wow.
Not a very good man.
Yeah. Terrible human.
He's actually a very terrible person. His wife escaped, but she ran to England as an asylum seeker with her daughter and I think £10 in her pocket.
Oh dear.
She said that yes, her husband was a closeted homosexual, but she doesn't believe he was a rapist. But
she ran from Mugabe.
Yes. Oh. So when he was put on trial, he actually escaped and went to South Africa, and it was actually Nelson Mandela who convinced him to go back and face the music and face his trial. He was saying, you know, this is a politically motivated trial. They're trying to kill me. Mugabe wants me dead. You know, he wants the power for himself. But Mandela convinced him to go back. He was sentenced to 9 years for his crimes, but he only served about 7 months. And apparently during his jail term, they allowed him out to go shopping. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What was he shopping for?
Maybe he wanted snacks.
Oh, like groceries and stuff.
I don't know. He was allowed to go shopping. So Kenan Banana, he lived many lives. A liberation fighter, a minister, a rapist, a one-time president, an exiled man, a poet, a writer. So he lived many lives, but he did pass a law making it illegal to make fun of his name.
Is that law still up till today?
I really doubt it, because so when he died of cancer, and by the time he died, he was stripped of all honors and titles.
Right.
He didn't get any state recognition. Like, it wasn't like, oh, we're burying an ex-president.
No.
And it's one of those tricky things, right? A lot of people say it's not because he was a rapist. It was because he was homosexual. Mm-hmm. He was gay. He raped men. If he had raped women, they probably wouldn't have
They would
cared.
Have covered it up.
They maybe not have cared so much. Before Banana was charged to court, Mugabe had come out and said that gay men were worse than pigs. And
wow.
Like, not a great guy, Mugabe.
No, we know that.
But I think it's very telling, you know, when you look at history of people in power, and sometimes, even if they are freedom fighters, like, you know, last week we spoke about a lot of people who led liberation movements in their countries and for their communities, but were not so great interpersonally, right? They were not necessarily great people. They might have had great philosophies or great ideas or great motivations, but they were not always good people.
Yeah.
And I think it's something we always have to consider when we look at history and when we look at the complexities of individuals and our collective history. We have to be honest about
who these people were.
Yes.
Because it helps us deal with current revolutionaries and politicians.
Yes,
and leaders.
Because I also think sometimes people, especially today, people need you to be perfect in order for you to lead a movement or fight for something. And historically, that's just not accurate. No one is, I mean, for, not that no one is perfect, like being a rapist or being an abuser, that's
different from problematic tweets.
It's different from problematic tweets, right? It's different from being a serial cheater or, you know, there's so many things. I think it's good clearly for us to know the legacies that different leaders have left, especially within the continent, right? Did you know about President Banana before today?
I did not, no. And I feel like I'm better for it.
So yes, let's go to our other truth for today. That bananas reduce the life expectancy in Central America. Now this one is heavy.
Heavier than President Banana?
It is heavy, yo.
Okay.
It's, you know what?
No, this, I'm worried. I'm worried now.
I was about to speak Yoruba. Because you know it's deep, you can't say it in English.
Say it in Yoruba.
I'm not even going there. Let all our listeners understand what I'm saying. But this one, we're serious, guys. It's very serious.
Okay.
So, bananas and Central America. You have to start from a man called Minor Keith. Minor Keith was an American man born in Brooklyn. All these things usually start with a colonial power. And Minor Keith started the United Foods Company. He went to Costa Rica. He was like, I want to build trains. Because so this is Gold Rush era. This is when you had the... who are those?
The... I'm trying to remember the what's the steel guy?
What's the steel guy? The richest man ever.
Cornelius. Oh, Rockefeller.
Yes, this is the Rockefeller era, right? Mm. Where people were making, it was like the gold rush, mm-hmm. right? And gold at that time was trains.
The industrial age.
Yes, and so all these people are making billions off of trains, but America at that time, the train lines were monopolized.
Carnegie, that's what
Carnegie, yeah. So you have Carnegie, you have Rockefeller, you have those rich dons, and Meineke was like, I want to be a rich don, but they have monopolized America, so let me go down to Central America. He goes to Costa Rica. He's like, I want to build train lines here. So that's how it starts. He just wanted to build train lines, and it was tough work because most of the eastern part of Costa Rica was basically jungle with snakes, and you know, it was dangerous terrain. Mosquitoes, malaria. So
he had to clear bush.
And clearing bush was very dangerous,
especially in Central America.
Yeah, so first he tried to get Costa Ricans to work for him. He started working Limon, and people were dying, and they were like, yeah, we're not gonna die for this, like, it's not worth it. Then he tries to get workers from America. He tries to get Italian immigrants from America to come and build his train lines, and they came and they were also dying, and they're not even acclimatized to this environment at all, so they were dying a lot. So he was like, okay, all these people are dying, let me get prisoners from New Orleans.
Oh no.
So he goes to the New Orleans prison system and he's like, makes a deal with the people there. He's like, yo, if you come and work for me, you'll get, like, you'll be free.
So he went to get prisoners from Louisiana.
Yes, so from black, New Orleans, Louisiana.
Black people.
Mostly.
Yeah.
And out of the hundreds of prisoners that he brought to Costa Rica, 23 survived.
God.
To get their pardons. Like, only 23 made it out.
What was killing everyone?
Trees would fall on them, malaria would kill them, mosquitoes carried, there were a lot of like pathogens there. There were snakes, there were like poisonous snakes. The work itself was grueling work. There's no workers' rights, there's no
'cause they're prisoners.
5-hour work a day or anything like that. They're working, it's back-breaking work constantly, and they are dying. And it's not just the workers he brought, two of his brothers died doing this. He was like, nah, I'm going to be Rockefeller. Y'all can die, I'm getting my money.
Before you continue this story, I just need a bit of a spoiler. Did he become a Rockefeller?
Yes, the banana industry is worth $23 billion today.
Okay, go back to where we stopped. Go back to where you stopped from. I need to hear how this works.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll fast forward. Let's go down to the bananas. He manages to get his train line. He buddy buddies with Costa Rican elite. He marries the president's daughter.
Okay.
He gets 800,000 acres of land, and he starts planting. And he's like, "Oh, this is easy. This is great. This is my goal. It's not the trains. It's the bananas." So
what happens? Wait, he finishes the train line.
He finishes the train line.
So what happens to that?
But in order to finish the train line, because so many people were dying and it was becoming very tough. So he went to the Costa Rican government. He was like, "I'll train line for free if you give me 800,000 acres of land, if you give me control of the port of Limon,
and if you give me the president's daughter." I'll take her too.
So how did bananas end up reducing the life expectancy? You're wondering.
I am.
It's not just the grueling work, which was part of it, right? Because then you have, essentially, he was like the first Amazon. He managed to make banana going from like relatively unknown exotic fruit that no one wants to eat because it's phallic, to the most, till today, banana is the number one fruit in America. It's the most sold item in Walmart.
That's crazy.
Bananas are
huge.
Right? And this is even before COVID and banana bread.
Wow.
Bananas are huge. Now imagine you own the trains, you own the transportation, own the farms, you own the land, you're not even paying rent. Mm. What's left for you to own?
The country.
The workers.
The workers?
The workers.
What year is this?
This is the 1900s.
Okay.
So this goes on till about 1970s, okay, when FDR comes in and changes it. But he doesn't, they start calling his company the United Foods Company. And in Central America, they called it El Pupo, which means the octopus. Because he had his hands in everything.
Mm.
He was considered like the uncrowned king of Central America. He controlled presidents. You know what? He got the United States government to intervene on his behalf in Guatemala, Honduras,
Nicaragua,
in Costa Rica. He even aided in the Bay of Pigs invasion,
which we discussed in the last.
Yeah, that led to the Cuban missile crisis
and the ban on cigars.
Yes,
this is interesting because it's very rare to hear about one person having this much influence across several countries. When it's one country, that happens. Two is almost unheard of. Three or four is insane.
And because of banana.
Because of banana.
Bananas. Do you know that I actually hate bananas?
They
taste like fiber.
I don't like the texture. But I've had a good banana or two. But that being said, I just never think, oh, I want a banana today and go out and buy one. So it's very interesting how, you know, Americans feel that way and people that shop at Walmart are just, you know, banana crazy.
So I'm going to tell you about, if you want to have context for just how many times the United States government got involved, I was actually going to make today's fact. Did the United States government kill thousands of Central Americans to secure their supply of bananas? And the answer is yes.
Okay.
Between 1920 and 1923, so in a three-year period, mm-hmm, in Honduras, they had 17 revolutions and coup attempts.
17 is a lot for 3 years.
That is a bunch.
Yeah. a bunch of bananas. It's good.
Oh yes.
Was that on purpose?
That was not on purpose. This is why we have the word banana republic.
In political science, the term banana republic describes a politically unstable country with an economy dependent upon the exportation of a limited resource product, such as bananas or minerals.
El Pupo turned Central America into a machine. Actually, Google, for anyone who's interested in how deep this gets.
For anyone interested in peeling back the layers.
Oh my gosh.
Google
the banana wars and you can find out just how many times the United States government intervened in multiple Central American countries, from Haiti, Hawaii, Puerto Rico, Costa Rica, Honduras, Guatemala, Brazil. How many times they intervened to protect interests of private American billionaires.
Mm.
But before we even go there, I need to talk to you about the banana massacre.
Okay.
In 1928 in Colombia, you had a rise of people fighting for basic workers' rights.
Right.
They were asking for a six-day work week. A six-day.
Yeah.
Right now we're fighting for four. Because honestly, Friday should be a day of rest. But they were fighting for 6 days. They only got a break for church. Right? And they were fighting for some health care. The banana industry had grown to the point where they essentially built towns around banana plantations. And so you have these communities which are mostly men, and then they grow, they start bringing their wives, their children, they build their churches.
Mm-hmm.
And at this time, America was like, oh my God, socialism, communism, no.
No, not on my watch.
Not on my watch.
Not what?
So in 1928, in a small town called, I might be butchering this, but Cienega in Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
It's like outside Santa Marta.
It's fine. You're not Colombian.
I'm not Colombian. I can't speak Spanish. On a Sunday, December the 6th, 1928, the workers who have been striking, you know, so they have a strike going on because they're striking, they're fighting for their rights. They go to church with their wives and their kids. And the American military had threatened the Colombian government with an invasion. They were like, you know what we're about.
Mm-hmm.
You see what we've done everywhere else.
You know what we'll do to get this?
If UFC's money is not protected, if our American roots are not protected, we're going to invade Colombia.
Mm.
So you guys fix this situation. They cannot strike. So while these men are in church, not men, while people are in church, the men, their wives, their children, while they're in church in the center of town, the Colombian military starts setting up machine guns outside.
Mm.
They have no idea what's going on.
Mm.
They've blocked off everywhere, and the church is in the town square, right? Mm. And they come out of church, church service is finished, they all come out with their families, and the military announces, you have 5 minutes to disperse. And they're counting down, like five, four. And their machine guns set up everywhere, and there's thousands of people.
So the people are coming from church, they're leaving church.
Yes.
And they're probably going to go home.
Yes.
Which, in all actuality, is dispersing.
Yes.
But then the military want them to do it faster.
Yes.
So they can't talk about socialism or communism.
Yes.
Okay.
And this is thousands of people, you know, piling out of church. There's confusion, right? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically boxed in. Mm-hmm. There's nowhere for them to go. And after they finish their 5 minute countdown, they open fire. They killed thousands.
Mm.
The estimates from that day, because obviously no one wants to say how many people were actually killed, so the estimates range from like 47 people to 6,000 people.
Jeez.
But we do have the US ambassador sending a wire, like from the US embassy in Colombia, sending a wire back to the United States government. And should I tell you what it said?
Please.
I have the honor to report that the Bogota representative of the United Fruit Company told me yesterday that the total number of strikers killed by the Colombian military exceeded 1,000. He said, I have
the honor
to report that we have killed 1,000 people for fighting for
basic human rights.
Basic human. They killed over 1,000 people leaving church on Sunday.
Mm.
Now, you would think it ends there. Or you would hope.
I do hope it ends there.
No.
It doesn't?
It does not.
Okay.
Because America had reinstated dictators
for
banana supply.
Yeah, they knew that the Americans had done worse for less.
Yes.
Yeah.
It also shows just how far governments will go to protect the interests of one rich man.
Mm. And that's the problem here, isn't it? It's not that they're protecting the interests of a country or a state. It's one rich person. That's very, very scary.
It is very scary. Minor Cooper Keith died 1 year after the Columbia massacre. But his company lives on.
As? Drum roll.
Chiquita Brands.
Okay.
Have you ever seen like those blue stickers on bananas? Like, I promise you.
Yes.
That's Chiquita.
Oh.
Chiquita Brands lives on today. It is a $1 billion company.
Mm.
They make millions and millions of dollars every year. I think in 2009, they made about $638 million.
Jeez.
But not just that. Like, in 2007, they were found guilty for funding terrorists in Colombia.
That's not a long time ago.
No.
That's not a long time ago.
In 2007, this same company, they've rebranded from United Foods Company to Chiquita Brands. It's the same thing.
Mm.
And in 2007, a United States federal court found them guilty for aiding and abetting a terrorist organization. They made a payment of over $1.7 million to a terrorist organization called AUC in Colombia.
Yeah.
They also supported them with over 3,000 AK-47s and helped them smuggle drugs into Europe. Banana companies are smuggling drugs into Europe.
And smuggling guns into Colombia. And this company still exists till today, I imagine.
Not just do they exist,
yes,
they thrive. They had to pay a fine for this in 2007, but then the United States government was like, Americans can't face trial in other countries, so we're not going to give you the names of the people who did this.
Right.
They fired 8 people. They got fired. Chiquita Brands had to pay restitution to 390 families who had been directly affected by them funding a terrorist organization. But the Americans involved, they made a deal with the government that the Americans involved, their names would never be
published.
Yes.
Oh, wow. This has been dark. We were right. It was darker
than... No, I'm telling you that it's darker than assassination. Like, this is real.
I didn't expect the episode about fruit to be darker than the episodes about... The episode about assassination.
But no, let me say, it's honestly very, very scary when you think about it. Like, I talked about what happened in Honduras, right? With all the coups, the change of government. The America actually invaded Honduras like 7 times.
Wow.
Right? And this started from banana.
Well, there you have it, folks. Bananas. Good, bad. Are you eating and abetting a sickening industry? Only time will tell.
Oh, time has told. What I love history is because it's not just about what happened in the past or how we got here. It's also telling to what we are doing right now, right? We are living history. This is really dark and this is really serious, and I need you to crack a joke in 20 seconds.
do you want a banana joke?
You give me a banana joke and I'll give you a fun fact.
Oh, thank you. Why did the banana go to the doctor?
His skin was peeling.
It wasn't peeling well. Yeah, like feeling well.
Oh my, that's terrible.
It is terrible. But like,
that's terrible.
Yeah, so was, you know, everything that's,
you know, I'm gonna give you a fun fact. It's about Justin Trudeau.
Okay.
Do you know this is very random. You know who Justin Trudeau is, obviously.
Yes.
Who?
The Prime Minister of Canada.
Can you remember when he was caught in blackface?
Mm-hmm.
Guess what song he was performing?
I come, Mr. Tallyman, Tally me banana. Yes. Delight, come man, we won't go home. 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot. No.
Come, Mr. Tallyman, Tally me banana.
Delight, come man, we won't go home.
Live
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot.
Justin Trudeau did blackface to sing the banana song. I thought he just did blackface, but that just makes it worse.
It makes it so much worse. I don't like that. Oh, good. Do you have trivia for the people listening?
I do. You know what? Let's keep it light. Today has been a bit heavy. So, trivia for today.
Trivia time.
You all ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Question for our listeners. Which of the following is the lie? Number one, 50% of women prefer reading 50 Shades of Grey than actually having sex. Number two, the lighter was invented before matches. And number three, statistically, it is safer to ride in economy than it is to ride in first class. Let's know your answer. First person to get this right and tell us what the truth behind the lie is gets a Listener of the Week trophy on our Instagram and Twitter pages. So remember, you know where to find us, at The Dirty Lie Podcast on Instagram and at The Dirty Lie Podcast on Twitter. Thank you for listening.
See you next week, guys.
Bye.